on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
It's Monday the 23rd of May and you're listening to Game On. Thanks to the two Johnnies, but I have to apologise to my colleague Shane Dawson for that lame answer he gave re Saipan 20 years ago. I can't imagine you wouldn't get off the fence even now, Shane. But anyway, coming up today, credit where credit is due. Stephen Kelly and Alan Colley are standing by to give a guard of honour to Pep Guardiola as Man City make more history.
Every second I pass after win this Premier League, we realise all of us, 4 Premier Leagues in 5 years in this country, Premier Leagues. It's probably the best achievements we have done in our careers. So it's incredible. I will be so proud for a long, long time.
That's the difference between me and you, Ruby. You like jumping fences. I like sitting on them. So in Gaelic games, we have news on the qualifier draw in Gaelic football, and in hurling, we have Niall Moran on a big weekend for both Wexford and Cork.
Was it much of a challenge today? Because Tipperary got a lightning start and you looked a bit flat on your feet, but the response was incredible.
Yes, look, you know all the championship games, like anything can happen. Like, you can't get too distracted after 5 minutes of the game, you know. You can easily put your head down, but like if you're worth your salt in anyway, you'll keep going, keep plugging away.
The sun is shining, you're in Thurles, Cork are after winning the Munster Championship match against Tipperary. I guess it doesn't get a whole lot better than that.
And in golf, we look back on Justin Thomas's win at the US PGA and a mixed weekend for the Irish in action. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company in this Monday evening, wherever in the world you are tuning in from. Lots to get through after an action-packed weekend of sport. But before we do, Ruby, a bit of GAA news, bit of rugby news. In GAA, All-Ireland champions Tyrone have been handed a difficult qualifier draw as they will make the short trip to Armagh. You can watch that one live on RT Television on Sunday, June 5th. The Ulster Derby is one of two All-Division 1 clashes, with Monaghan also travelling to Mayo for the first championship meeting between the counties on Saturday, June 4th. Also trying in on the Saturday is Clare versus Meath in Ennis and Cork versus Louth in Portcullis. Also on that June bank holiday weekend, Ulster and Munster's quarterfinal show down will kick off in the United Rugby Championship playoff phase. The fixture between the two provinces at Ravenhill will take place on June 3rd, with Leinster's last eight clash against Glasgow kicking off the following afternoon at the RDS. The other quarterfinals also take place on a Saturday, with the All South African fixture between Vodacom Bulls and Sale Sea Sharks in Pretoria, as well as Edinburgh's trip to face the Stormers in Cape Town. So they are the fixtures out of the way. Also a bit of boxing, sorry, in the last, what, half hour, I think. Gabriel Dawson was the first Team Ireland boxer in action at the Men's European Championships, and the Galway native got the Travan contingent off to a winning start to progress to the last 16, fighting in the 75kg middleweight division. Dawson enjoyed a comfortable, albeit split decision victory against his Spanish opponent. So very well done to Gabriel Dawson. But Ruby, that's all to look forward to in 2 weeks' time. What a weekend of sport. You were at the Curra. Did you catch any football, or was all horse racing for you?
No, I was at the Curra, listened to a bit of hurling on the radio, watched a bit of soccer, yesterday afternoon, just about caught the end of that, as well as some football, but yeah, incredible weekend. The Curra was great, Shane. Native Trail won the 2000 Guineas, beating New Energy of Sheila Laveries. He didn't blow us away like everyone thought he might, but he got the job done. But on Sunday, Homeless Song for Dermot Weld and Chris Hayes was breathtaking in the 1000 Guineas. She looked exceptional. She beat Tuesday in Concert Hall, who was the real eye catcher. Looking at the Oaks going forward, Pearls Galore won the Landweight Stakes. Alan Kerr won the Tattersalls Gold Cup. That was a brilliant race to watch tactically. Ryan Moore was exceptional on high definition in front. And then Tom Marcand, who had arrived at the Curra late and didn't even get to walk the track, didn't really know where he was going, managed to land Alan Kerr on the line to beat high definition with State of Rest back in third. Some great racing. Might have saw a Royal Ascot winner or two in Blackbeard, who won the Marble Hill Stakes on Saturday. He'll head for the Coventry or Royal Ascot. But look, all in all, it was a good weekend, Shane. Big cold in the Curra, maybe not the crowds they were hoping for, but I suppose yesterday afternoon when you were competing with the final of the Premier League, it was going to be hard to get anybody to go anywhere.
Yes, very much so. Final of the Premier League, bit of hurling as well. It was a brilliant weekend of sport. And I suppose let's get stuck into the Premier League, because that caught many people's eyes. Alan Colley is live in studio with ourselves, Ruby. Alan, and Stephen Kelly, I should say, is also joining us on the line, but I'll throw my first question to yourself, Alan. I mean, What a weekend. Just we're blessed to have it.
Absolutely, Shane, yeah. It was an absolute blockbuster. And I suppose sometimes with finals like this, big finals, are you coming to the end of football season with a clash like we had with Liverpool and Man City, there's so much hype and expectation, but it doesn't always live up to that expectation. And that was my hope going into yesterday afternoon. I even tweeted about it just beforehand, saying I hope this lives up to all expectation. And by God, did it deliver. It was absolutely unbelievable. It was as good a viewing as I've watched now in a long, long time, Shane. And I did predict beforehand that I felt Liverpool were in with a good chance. I felt Villa may get something out of the game, a draw. And it was certainly playing out that way. And in terms of the game plan that Liverpool had, I thought Gerrard tactically was absolutely brilliant. I watched the Man City game, and he set up with a formation of 4-3-2-1, almost like a double screen in front of the back four of Man City. So everything had to go wide. Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne, who pick up those little pockets as the two number eights, they just couldn't find any space whatsoever because it was so condensed with the amount of bodies Gerrard had in there. And I thought it was a brilliant setup. And they actually looked like they were struggling, Man City. Then they had the threat of Ollie Watkins on the breakaway with Coutinho and Buendia, a bit of creativity in behind that as well. And they always did look a threat. And when they scored a brilliant counter-attack goal, Guardiola looked shell-shocked. The fans, obviously, they were shell-shocked as well. And then when they got the second goal, I felt, this is it. I switched over to Liverpool because it was back on them then, and it was 1-1 at that stage. So I switched over, and I couldn't see Man City getting back into it at that stage because it looked like they had run out of ideas. He made a couple of substitutions. So I flicked over to Liverpool thinking, the onus is on you now. The ball is in your court. You have to score. I did expect him to score. And just as I'd flicked over, it came up on the bottom of the screen that City had scored. So I was back to Man City again and I stuck with that then. And obviously a whirlwind, 6 or 7 minutes to score 3 goals. The Alamo came and it was just phenomenal. And I did feel a little bit sorry for Liverpool, but in terms of Man City, and especially when you think they went 2-0 down against West Ham, had to fight back last weekend as well, did the same yesterday. It's hard to obviously separate just how good the two teams are. Both of them deserve enormous credit, but the best team always comes out on top in terms of the league, and Man City over the course of it fully deserve it. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant day's viewing.
Stephen, I know there's a huge squad at Man City and there was 11 players on the pitch, or including substitutions, probably 13. But when it all came down to it, was the difference Kevin De Bruyne?
Yeah, he's just, when you see when he builds up for the second goal, for the last goal, he just steps in. He just, his reaction when the ball is lost from Mings, and he just, you can just see the determination on both ends. Often players get into that position and they just don't finish with the quality, but his pass that I thought for Gundogan on the back post to tap it in is just unbelievable. But yeah, you know what, you have to look at Pep as well. You know, sometimes he gets criticized for tactical, which is a bit crazy, I suppose, but you look at his change, Zinchenko, put Cancelo to the right and bring Zinchenko on the left, because as Alan was describing the game there, the space was out wide, but because they had inverted fullbacks, they were coming inside and making the tight. So he changed it over. Cancelo was then going on the outside. Zinchenko was going on the outside. That changed the game completely for City, and for a manager to be able to see that and then tactically change it, because you could be like, you, Jack Grealish on the bench there, you're thinking, I'll just put him on, he's a winger. But no, he went with the fullback and it completely changed it. So you've got to give credit to Pep. But, you know, these two teams are doing something that you've never seen before, going head to head. And I would have loved to see Liverpool score when City were behind, because to see how City would have reacted, if that would have changed the outcome, would have changed the outcome of it, because that would have sifted into the stadium. The fans would have heard that Liverpool now are top, and, you know, Liverpool not being able to take advantage of that point. You know, that was the only thing that was missing from yesterday. But apart from that, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, it was incredible, Alan. I must give you some credit, Alan. You had 2 calls at the start of the season. You were completely wrong with one, which was Chelsea winning the league. But you were spot on about Burnley sacking Sean Dyche.
Yeah. I didn't think you were going to go there. That's
very much a veiled compliment.
Is it even a compliment? But just in terms of, I suppose, I would have always stuck with Dyche, I think. And there's not an awful lot of room for sentimentality in football. Unfortunately, we don't see that nowadays. But when you think of the job that he had done over the 8 years on a shoestring budget, just keeping them in the division, not the most fashionable, but going about it in his way and proving right each year, I just felt he was afforded that opportunity to maybe see it out till the end of the season. Obviously, they made the change because they were fearful of, had they stuck with Dyche, they would have got sacked. But ultimately, the man that replaced him got them sacked as well, regardless of the little bounce that they got when he took over. So I would have stuck with Dyche 100%, Ruby.
Alan, bit of a moment of madness for our own Nathan Collins just on the Burnley topic. I know he did redeem himself somewhat. I think he got the assist for a goal, but it was unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and look, these things happen. Obviously, Shane, you know, and you're looking at the Leeds situation as well. I actually would rather give Leeds the credit, because to go to Brentford, I thought Leeds were gone. I absolutely thought they were gone. I knew it was a tough game for Burnley against Newcastle, but the fact that they were at home, I thought they may get a draw and they might match Leeds' result, and that's what would keep them up because of the goal difference. But for Leeds to go away to Brentford, because Brentford have been in good form, difficult place to go as well. I watched them last week against Everton, and they were very, very good. So I think Leeds deserve enormous credit, because when you psychologically even going into that, everybody had them down, Shane. So that was a tough ask. They were low on confidence. So to be fair to Jesse Marsh, to pull out that one result like they did, I think they deserve enormous amount of credit.
And Stephen Kelly, Tottenham Hotspur, Champions League football. I say you're a happy man.
Yeah, I am. I was at Carrow Road doing the game yesterday, and it was just, to be fair, the atmosphere was amazing. They played so well. They really do. They look such a good track going forward. And what was great about it was, like, Norwich are, you know, deservedly bottom of the table. They were really poor. And I don't think Tom had anything to fear going into that. A little bit of complacency or that Spursiness that everybody quotes. That could have happened, but they didn't. They were just on it from the get-go. Could have had 7, and Son could have scored 4 and won the Golden Boot outright. But what was amazing was watching Conte on the sideline. He literally didn't sit down until they scored the 4th, and after that, you see, he kind of just sat down and took a bit of a break from it. But up until that point, he was edging them on, kicking every ball, demanding the best from his players, and it was a great performance all around from them. And you just kind of feel, with the makings of what they've got, with the star quality they have in the forward areas in midfield, they're looking very strong again now. If they can bring in some talent, they really could pose a threat next season. And you know, it's fingers crossed, it's looking bright for them if they keep Conte. Well, hopefully they do.
Alan, that's it now. All done and dusted. 38 matches over. There's a point separating the top two. They were 18 clear of the third. There's only 5 points between third, fourth and fifth. And they need a break of 11 back to Manchester United. Can any one of those three teams in the middle, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, can they get up to Liverpool, Man City's level next year? Or are we looking at the same thing again? Another Man City-Liverpool slog or battle, or... It was entertaining, but we're looking at the same thing again.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult gap to try and bridge, Ruby, whatever even about the points deficit, just in terms of the standard themselves, when you watch the teams, just how good they are and how far ahead they are, both of them dragging each other on as well in terms of the battle and going toe-to-toe with each other. Obviously, Haaland is to come in, so they're going to improve. You could imagine how good Man City and the amount of goals they've scored, and you throw him into the mix, so they're not going anywhere. They're going to get even better. Liverpool the same, obviously, with the addition of Diaz coming in as well. If they keep Salah, I think they're going to be very much as strong as what we've seen. But I'd agree with Stephen on Spurs, and purely down for the manager. Like, we speak so glowingly about Guardiola and Klopp, and rightly so, they're absolutely amazing managers. But I would have Conte in that bracket as well, Ruby. I think he's an absolute superstar of a manager, and we often speak about Manchester United, and I think he should have went to Manchester United. That's who they should have got. Obviously, they didn't. I think Spurs are very, very lucky to have him. And you look at the difference since he's come in at Spurs, even in terms of the conditioning of the players as well, let alone the 2 or 3 players that he's brought in, Bentancur and Kulusevski, who have made a massive difference. They have the 2 best strikers, you would argue, in the league with Son and Kane. I think Romero has the potential to be the best centre-half in the league as well. So if they're to add 2 or 3, they could potentially be the closest to Man City and Liverpool come next season. I think Chelsea will be back to some sort of level as well, obviously with all the distraction that went on this year. I think they'll be better, but certainly in terms of, maybe they may close the gap, a couple of those teams like I mentioned, Spurs, but I can't see anyone overtaking those two.
Speaking of managers, Stephen, I watched Jack Grealish after the game yesterday talking on Sky, and he was talking about Pep Guardiola and how Pep hates players losing the ball. Will it take Haaland time to get used to that? Listen to Jack Grealish, you felt that it was only against West Ham last week that he'd gotten used to playing how Pep would like him to play.
You can see, you know, it was a very honest interview from Jack. He was saying how it was much tougher than he thought it was going to be. And I think from the outside looking in, you know what he expects. And Jack was from a very different situation. Jack was picking the ball up in his own half and running with it. And
affording that luxury of losing it, where City just don't give up possession. And that's what makes them so good, is because they have so much possession, and if they do lose it, they get it back really quickly. And it's that reaction to getting it back that calls them so good, because teams just don't often have the ball, so they struggle to score against them. And it was going to take a lot for Jack to kind of adjust his game to what Pep wants, but you know, there is a superstar in there. Like, he is a sensational footballer. He really is. I trained with him enough to know that he's one of these players that I hate. That I hope to God that it's not going to be, you know, oh, he was so good in training. And everybody talks about him and plays him as he's the best player you've ever played with, but he never achieves the accolade of actually achieving that on the pitch. I hope he goes on and produces a week in, week out for City and wins stuff for them, because he really is, he's a superstar. And it's got to be tough. But I think Haaland's slightly different. I think he knows what's expected from him. He's going to come in, and the type of pace he offers and the service they're going to be firing into him, I think he'll hit the ground running.
I don't want to get too bogged down in this conversation, because I think we've done this at length, but finally Manchester United have unveiled their manager, and he's been in front of the media. And I do want to open up the conversation into the best moments of the season and what we're looking forward to, but just on Erik ten Hag. So Steve McLaren's in there, Alan Mitchell van der Gag as well is in there. He's got a tough task on his hands. He knows that. He says it's a big challenge in a short period of time. This could be successful or somewhat successful, but it also could go very wrong.
No, I'd be optimistic about it, Shane, to be fair. I think everyone deserves a chance, and obviously this manager is going to get that. Depends on, I suppose, the time that he gets. Depends on the recruitment and what players he's able to bring in, allowed to bring in, or who he can get. I think it's a shrewd move bringing in Steve McLaren, to be fair, his experience as well. Everybody speaks very well about him in terms of his coaching when he was at Man United under Ferguson as well, and he has huge experience, so I think that was a shrewd move. And I'm optimistic about it, Shane, because he's done a very good job at Ajax. They're coming off such a low base as well, in terms of where they are, and we've all seen the downfall and how bad it's been and yes, where they're at, and I'm sure morale is at an all-time low at that club. So it can only go one way in my view, which is up. It can't get much worse than what it is at the moment. So much will depend on who we can get out of the club so that he can get players into the club as well, in terms of their wages as well, and get them off the wage bill. But he deserves the chance, he deserves the opportunity. I don't think he can get much worse than what we've seen this year, because it's been an absolute shambles over a number of years now. But I would be slightly optimistic about this manager, I have to say.
Stephen, without dragging the conversation too far with Manchester United, if you could move three players, who would you get rid of?
Wan-Bissaka, Bali, Lindelof. I could keep going on if you want.
Pogba is number one.
Lingard. I'm just going from the back up. I could go through the whole team if you want. Lingard, Pogba. There's a load of them I'd clear out just go for fresh, get new people in here that want to be at that club, that can produce for you, that know what it takes to be a winner and respond well to manager's criticism and do what the manager wants. You know, these players are not, no matter what manager's been there, they haven't been able to implement what the manager wanted from them. You want, look at Conte's at Spurs, and it's again, I'm going to go back to them, and Man U must be kicking themselves they didn't get him. But you look at what he would have wanted. He would have went in there and ripped them apart. And if those players didn't want to do what he wanted to do, they would have been out the door, or else he would have been out the door, because he wouldn't have been happy with the club not backing him. So they need to bring in players that are going to play the system and listen to what their manager wants, because otherwise, if they're all doing different things, they're never going to achieve a collective goal, which is trying to get back up to be competing with City and Liverpool.
Talent is one thing, but I think where they've fallen short is the characters at the club. They've some really kind of iffy characters, very suspect in terms of their attitude and approach. And again, you go back to, because we can only compare it to the best that's around, you go back to Guardiola and Klopp and the demands they put on players and the characters they have at their football club in terms of what they produce week in, week out, and their attitude. So I think that's where Man United have to be very, very shrewd in who to bring in good characters.
It only goes back to yesterday, lads. You look at Man City, they're two down. You look at Liverpool, they're drawn, and then both managed to win. It only goes back as far. You just look at yesterday to understand what character is in some clubs and how little is in others. To get beat by Palace 1-0 in the final day of the year, it's just the end of a sorry season for
it. It can't get any worse. I did see one of the Glazers was doorstepped by Sky News today over in Davos and kind of was said about, it was a disappointing season. And it's like, oh, now's not the time. It's like, well, the fans found it disappointing. Well, it's like, yeah, it was disappointing, and we always invest when we can. I mean, Erik ten Hag, whatever about the challenges he has about the mentality of the playing group, in the boardroom offices, it's going to be one big, big fight he has on his hands. It's
leaving that mess aside, right? None of us are going to solve that mess. What about what Jurgen Klopp has to do this week? They didn't win the Premier League, Stephen, and he's got to get those players up for the weekend. What's his week going to be?
I think going into that game, they knew that wasn't in their hands, so it makes it a little bit less. I know the way the game was going and with the fans and during the emotion that must have been happening up in them and the opportunity that they could have gone back on top. But going into that game, knowing that they could have won the league, but no matter what they did in the day, if they had won 10-0 against Wolves, which to be honest, I fully expected because Wolves were awful last week when I watched them, I expect them to hammer them. But I kind of think that that's a little bit of reassurance for them, that they know that, listen, we pushed them close again. It's an exceptional side. City, you know, we just have to focus on this Champions League game, and they're still going to be class. If they're going to win the Champions League, then they know that no matter what people are saying about the Premier League, that if they win the Champions League, that completely overrides. They've done the treble, and it's an amazing achievement that it supersedes not winning the Premier League if they win the Champions League. So that the main focus is getting that job done, and it's revenge against Madrid. So I'm sure they're all looking forward to getting that game done.
Right, gents, we have a couple of minutes left on our Premier League chat. So overall review, Alan Colley, I'm going to come to yourself. What was your best moment of the season and what was the most disappointing moment of the season?
Well, you've put me on the spot now, Shane. Best moment of the season. I love Son. Love
Son. You've killed me, Colley. You've absolutely killed me.
Sorry, Stephen, sorry. And he put me on the spot.
I know I was doing you a favour, Stephen, by letting yourself and Ruby have a little think about it before I came to you.
Oh, there you go. That's how good I am. Just taking on my feet here. But I absolutely love Son. And it always amazes me how none of the big clubs, you never hear him mentioned in terms of some of the bigger clubs signing him. And Spurs are a massive club, obviously, but maybe like even a Real Madrid or a Barcelona, I think he could play with any team. And again, you go back to character and attitude. He's never injured, plays every game, fit as a fiddle, two good feet, unbelievable finisher. He's phenomenal, Son. And I was delighted that he actually got to, I know he didn't overtake Salah, but he got his couple of goals. And for him to finish off the season with the golden boot, that's a happy moment for me, Shane.
And the negative moment?
It always goes back to United and
and how bad they were.
Yeah, just desperate. I'm glad Leeds stayed up as well. Leeds are a massive club. I'd be disappointed for the way things ended with Sean Dyche. I'm a big fan of Sean Dyche and the job that he's done, particularly the way he carries himself. He's always been very classy and dignified in how he's conducted himself, and I just felt the way Burnley treated him towards the end was pretty poor, and I'm glad they got relegated because of it.
Okay. Stephen Kelly?
I'm going to jump on his bandwagon and say Son again, because to do what he did, scoring 23 goals without a penalty in that, is just like ridiculous. And in a team that for a large part of the season weren't really competing, so he's a standout. And I want to actually use him for a positive and negative. Him doing what he did was amazing, but him not actually being nominated for Player of the Year is the negative for me. I don't know how that's even conceivable, that he wasn't up there with the in contention for that. Now, you throw into the fact, I think everything was a negative. I think they were so bad, and the celebrations they had for staying out and staying in relegations, that's just, you know, those players, they feel that they have that. And at that moment, it's amazing, and your own, everything's all relative to you. So in that moment, that's the most joy. Those players felt as much joy as what they would have won the Champions League, because it was a bit. But for everyone to be in that situation where they almost went down, I think that's got to be, considering the money they've spent over the last 7 or 8 years, you know, they got to take a long, hard look at themselves.
I'm going to throw one in, this last one, sorry, on that back of that Everton thing. Richarlison tweeting about Liverpool not winning the league. Yeah. Have some self-awareness, you fool. You need to just avoid a relegation.
Funny enough, I thought the opposite. I thought watching the Everton bus going into the stadium and all the blue smoke and the way the fans were rallying around behind them, I thought that was old-style, traditional club
league. Proper fan culture.
Yeah, but that was
proper
before the match, Ruben. That's fine outside. I think Stephen's on about them celebrating.
Oh, yeah, I know that, but you're asking me for a highlight. I just thought to see a club or a group of fans be that passionate about their team before they went into the stadium to go out on the pitch. I thought, you're on about the 12th man. I thought there was definitely a 12th man in Liverpool for Everton. A highlight, Kevin De Bruyne for me. And even yesterday, I thought his assist for the first goal and the way he went after the ball for the third goal. I think, to me, it reminded me of Roy Keane when he got the yellow card in 99 against
Juventus.
Yeah.
Semi-final. Yeah.
That's what I thought watching Kevin De Bruyne yesterday. I thought there was one man on the pitch that wanted it more than everybody else.
Yeah, I certainly echo your comments about that fan culture, Ruby. And actually, a small highlight was having safe standing implemented in Premier League grounds. But I think I'm going to get sentimental and say my highlight was the return of Christian Eriksen.
Ah, brilliant, Shane.
That's a good one.
I think the lad talking the question had the right answer, isn't it?
Yeah. I certainly don't have notes. You can't hear notes going to my mic here. And my most disappointing or low moment, I would say... I don't actually have this one written down. Newcastle's ownership and how Eddie Howe dealt with the press. And I hope that's not how we're going to go on.
My low point is players tweeting they're sorry about how they played.
That's not going away, Ruby, sadly.
That is a low point from now going forward.
Frustratingly, you probably could even rephrase that, Ruby, of your low point being how players get their management teams and social media teams to tweet how they're feeling, which is makes it much less personal. But however... Oh, Premier League done and dusted, gents. But we still got the League of Ireland to look forward to, absolutely, which we'll be chatting Shane, a bit absolutely. Later on. We'll be chatting a bit later on. Alan Colley, Stephen Kelly, thank you both very much. Brilliant weekend in the Premier League, and lots more to come on football a little bit later on, but lots more to come on tonight's Game On overall, as we will be turning our attention to hurling in a few moments' time. So do stay with us.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game On.
Hurling.
Oh, welcome back to Game On. So last weekend was saw the concluding round in the round robins in the National Hurling League, or Championship even. The league is well and truly over, and it was the league winners who ended up being the biggest losers. Niall Moore and Joyce is on the line. Niall, Waterford. What an amazing, oh not amazing, what an incredible few weeks it's been, from such a high to such a low yesterday in Ennis.
Yeah, four can be cruel, Ruby. I suppose, again, like 4 weeks ago, I thought no Waterford had been one of the main contenders to the Ireland, but I suppose ultimately what we probably discovered was the folly, maybe for some teams of a league system. Traditionally, if you were beaten in the first round of the championship, you'd play the qualifier, and look, if you went down in a second time round, you accepted your beating. Where I suppose in Waterford's case, they had two beatings in a row, and I suppose the turnaround was so short from the Cork game that, look, you could see by their body language, like obviously they're not 12 points a worse team than Clare, but I suppose when the wheels fall off the wagon, they fall off spectacularly. And I even know, look, sometimes when you're looking at the big prize as going from number two to number one, you kind of lose sight, literally, of the amount of teams that are actually on your own level. And I suppose for Waterford, I suppose they became a little bit, you'd argue maybe a little bit disillusioned with themselves. And I suppose that came home to roost in yesterday.
It most certainly did. But it's been an incredible round robin series for Clare too. I mean, what, four games, three wins, the draw with Limerick, from the league campaign they had to where they have, it's the exact opposite to Waterford.
Yeah, looks like, again, I suppose expectation, Ruby, and you know, in sport, riding horses, but like expectations, sometimes when you've huge expectations, you don't quite match those really, really high standards. I suppose things can fall off the wagon, and in the opposite, I suppose when you're with low expectations, you just take it game by game, which obviously Clare have done, and they've improved incrementally from the pre-season right through to the league, and to a point where they have a lot of guys hitting top form here at the moment. Like obviously Tony, the last day was superb, but like Shane O'Donnell yesterday, Peter Duggan catching fire, David Fitzgerald. They have a lot of top-class hurlers coming to the boil at the very, very right time. And again, I just, even the Munster final is just going to be, it's going to be a cracker. You know, I even know here in our own club, they've got as many requests as they've ever had for a game for Munster final. It's 2 weeks away. So I think it's going to be a memorable Munster final, even as both an occasion and the game.
So Clare Limerick in a Munster final, but the other team true from Munster is Cork. And you talk about teams taking it kind of game by game and players coming to the boil and doing well. I want to talk about Conor Lehan, Niall. I mean, the redemption man for possibly the redemption team, because you go back to, what, late 2020, Cork lose to Tipperary in the qualifier. You think Conor Lehan's inter-county career is over or is on prolonged hold anyway, and now he's back, and it was some performance at the weekend.
Yeah, he was class, but I suppose I was always of the opinion, I never kind of thought that Conor Lehan was respected by his own in the same way as he was without, and I suppose for a lot of Cork people, they probably had a sense of frustration around Conor in the sense that he'd go two games and hit 6 points in play and the next one go scoreless. And I think he was a victim of his own high standards maybe in terms of getting the cull the way he did. But look, yesterday he was unmarkable as Bob and Perlis. He was unmarkable, but in the same breath, he probably wasn't marked either. And I suppose, like looking at it from a defensive perspective, Tipperary were all over the shop in terms of picking him up, in terms of tracking him. And then like he just turned on, especially in the first half, he turned on an absolute exhibition. His skill level is second to none. And but again, there was a game there. It was, you know what I mean, it was 1-3 to no score, and we had the penalty with Noel, and all of a sudden, what could have been a 7-point lead was down to 1-point lead, and that is the margins that we're dealing with. And I suppose the argument is that it just needs calm heads at times, because things can turn so quickly. And look, the one thing I would argue for that Cork team is that if the manager is having to go by, then there's substance in that group. And I think that, like, the way that Carrigan says, even in their earlier defeats, they didn't start throwing their toys out of the pram. And I suppose, again, they probably had the extra week to recover from their second loss that Waterford didn't, and probably give them enough time to get the kind of dirty smoke out of the system. And now, again, they're live contenders. They're going to go a long way. They're going to probably end up maybe in Ireland semi-final. And again, if they can get through that, chances are that they've won maybe 5-6 games on the bounce, and they'll be full of the rebel confidence, the cockiness.
Absolutely. And it could be Cork Kerry in a quarter final, in a hurling quarter final, which is mad fixture stuff. Just on Tipperary, we wrap up our Munster kind of round robin chat on this note. Listen, it is what it is. We can see they're going through a period of transition. Is it just a case of Colin Bonner just needs time? Let him recover, let the Tipperary panel get over what happened this year, and they go again? Because given the way Munster ended, you'd say that there's probably a bigger post-mortem to be held in Waterford than there is in Tipperary. So at least Tipperary can just kind of go through this process, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, it is a process. And again, look, I suppose the expectation Tipperary was kind of matched ultimately in how they finished up. I think it was a bet at the start of the championship. It was 11-1 to Tipper to lose all four games. And I suppose I'm sure some people in Tipperary, probably that was the kind of faith they had in them. But I suppose, look, ultimately it comes to, like, Tipperary. Like, they had been through a famine period before, through the 70s into the early 80s. And not that they're going through a famine period, but I suppose the calibre of hurler they're producing, it's just not quite at the level that Tipperary expect. And I suppose maybe as they go along over the coming months and maybe the next couple of years, they'll probably try and find a sense of identity. And again, look, you've had a golden generation go out the door with the Mahers. Obviously, Shamie Cannon didn't play in this year's championship. Noel McGrath again yesterday, he was still a heartbeat. He never, ever gave up the fight. So I suppose for Colin Bonner, I suppose he probably went down with the job. I would imagine on the premise that he was going to be given a couple of years to try and lift the thing and get new guys in. And I suppose, look, there has been boys back there. Craig Morgan, I thought, you know what I mean, he did very well. Conor Stakelin was a bolter. He did quite well in the games he played. Ger Brown showed glimpses of what he could be. So again, patience is required. And if the lesson that you learned from this year's championship is that care, you look at it in the face of 2 years, a year even, things can turn very rapidly. So I suppose cool heads call for all around the Munster.
It can turn rapidly. And in Leinster, well, Waterford couldn't get the job done in Ennis, but Wexford had to go to Kilkenny to Nolan Park, and they did get the job done. 122-118. Big win for Darragh Egan.
Yeah, massive win. And I suppose, again, just listening, I suppose the couple of Wexford people in the build up to it, I think they probably felt that performance was in them. And again, maybe that's again the beauty, the other side of the league basis, where before, if you'd drawn with a Westmeath or possibly even lost to Westmeath, you'd be 12 months waiting to get your redemption. Whereas Darragh Egan said, hey, it's a practice, lads. No point in dwelling on it. We don't have that time. And they just went for it. And look, when you go to Nolan Park and you outwork them, and I suppose the stats kind of told that there with hooks, blocks, tackles, they outworked them for that. And they didn't allow Kilkenny kind of just get in under their skin. And then, to be fair to Lee Chin, and I know he's often hurled upon, but there was a 20-minute period there in the second half where he just took it to them, he took the fight to them. And in fairness, like, there was huge players there. Like, obviously, Damien Reck made a couple of massive plays there as well. Liam Ryan coming up and getting a point. And so that's just a little bit of spirit. And again, like, they're obviously now going to qualify as a huge confidence. I suppose it's probably an issue for them is in terms of having a prolific score. They're still probably Roy O'Connor's most prolific that they have. And like, again, they probably need a bigger spread of scores to be challengers.
They're going to the qualifiers. Kilkenny obviously are going to the Leinster final, where they're going to face Galway. Look, I was in the car listening to this, and neither of the two commentators in Galway were overly enamoured with the first half of their match against Dublin, but ultimately they got the job done.
They got the job done, and a whole night to review, I was there below milking the receiving, and I was just thinking about things. And you'd often see kind of a team just get the run in right at the right time. I'd just be wary of Galway. I'd be wary from an overall perspective. I'd just be wary of them. They're very, very good hurlers. They're a very shrewd manager. You know what I mean? They have Grod, Mac, Dahi Burke, David Burke, a couple of these boys that are probably staying behind the whole pile of years left in us. And look, you would nearly expect that they'll beat Kilkenny and up in an All-Ireland semi-final, and after that it's two cup finals, and again they're just the team that needs to be watched, because Newt Conor-Whelan and Conor Mannion, you know, Joseph Cooney, Conor Cooney, these are guys who are all Kerry Gorwitz and All-Ireland, so they will take watching as they go along. But I suppose ultimately for Dublin, they'll be disappointed too. Again, lack of scoring power probably killed them, like the reliance on Donal Burke, and it has to be said, his scoring rates are off the charts. You would hope a guy like him would get rewarded with an All-Star nomination, but as in, the spread of scores at this level needs to be a lot more, and it's disappointing for Matty that he's put in a lot of good work, but so a sense of frustration that they probably haven't pushed on.
Yeah, very much so. Do you feel Matty Kenny can get much more out of this Dublin team, or is this the level that just this Dublin panel are at the moment?
He's probably done quite well with what he had. I suppose one of the differences there to probably more recent managers is that they're coming off a Dublin underage system that was a lot more productive. Just looking at it from the outside, I don't think the Dublin underage system has been as productive in the last 5 or 6 years. And even like looking at the forwards there yesterday, there's a lot of guys who've probably been around for the last few years, Eamon Dillon, Danny Sutcliffe, they have a lot of it done. I don't really think that they have any out and out top class forwards coming back to them that's going to really improve them in the short term. So look, I don't know, Matty Kenny again, very honourable man, I don't know what his intentions are going forward, but again, when you say there's a rebuilding job in Dublin, these jobs take time and they probably require a little bit of what Offaly had during the week with underage success on a consistent basis.
Speaking of underage success, Kilkenny and Limerick faced off in the under 20 at the weekend. The Cats came out on top. Were you surprised? Disappointed?
They're obviously disappointed, Ruby. I suppose we're not ahead of ourselves here in Limerick. Every time we get to an All-Ireland, it takes teams so much and so much hard work to get to an All-Ireland final. And I suppose when you're there, they're a lot harder won. And I know, look, Dermot Mullins and his backroom team couldn't get any better in the country then, and they put an amount of work in, but ultimately Kilkenny have this quality of this battling and never say die, and again they tend to win things against the head, and that is just every time you look at teams and standard bearers, and down here in Limerick we still say Kilkenny is a team that we still look to, their qualities, their fighting, their honesty, I suppose, and that's a major fill-up for Kilkenny. I suppose they're, like you look at yesterday, Billy Drennan, top class forward. Do you know what I mean? He will definitely be a guy that you'll be looking to push on. And look, they won it. I suppose there will be a disappointment in Limerick, again, in the nature of, not that it was the turning point as such, but I suppose a little bit of controversy with regard to Hawkeye. And again, in real time, like there was a similar instance in the senior game that was called back even once the play had resumed for a point from Shane Kingston. I just wonder who was above, whoever was above in the doing the Hawkeye, he must have went out for a cup of coffee at some stage. As you would imagine that they have that technology at hand, and that somebody else would have even taken that responsibility off the ref, being in his ear and say, hey, go back here to this for a second. So again, not that the management or not that any Limerick person is using it as an excuse, but when you have technology available, it's the least the players deserve to have it used.
They do indeed. You're the only Limerick man giving out about it, but we're not making it up as an excuse. I'm only slacking down more. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back next week with more hurling. Time for a quick commercial break.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Golf.
So, Justin Thomas claimed his second US PGA Championship in dramatic circumstances in Southern Hills after making up 7 shots on the leaders before besting Will Zalatoris in a 3-hole playoff. For the second straight major, Ireland had 2 golfers in the top 10 with Rory McIlroy in 8 and on 2 under, and Seamus Power shot back in a tie for 9th in Tulsa, Oklahoma. However, this tournament may be remembered for the collapse of Chile's Mito Pereira at the 72nd hole. Knowing a par would be enough to claim his first win on the PGA Tour, he drove his tee shot into the creek and ended up dropping to a tie for 3rd with a double bogey. Raimi Burns, former European Tour pro, joins us now. And Raimi, I do want to get your thoughts on the Irish performance, but first off, let us start with the winner, Justin Thomas. How impressive was his performance to stay in contention and eventually reign supreme with such a fantastic final round?
Yes, Jenny, he really played incredible golf yesterday afternoon. He's been trending a lot for the last few months. he hasn't won a major since 2017, but I just last night was a clinical performance. You know, he had 367s and 74 on Saturday. And I just think his composure, he never watched leaderboards. He just went about his business. And I do think that his caddy, Jim Bones, Mattei, I think he had a big part to play last night. He seemed to keep him really calm and collective. And you know yourself, when you're out there and you're trying to win a major, there's so many nerves and there's so many things happening so quickly. And he just seemed to just play the more clinical golf than everyone else played. Unfortunately, he got to the number 5 under, and it was good enough to get him in the playoff. And his playoff performance for 2 under par through 3 holes was phenomenal. You know, the golf course played really tough for the 4 days, 4 different winds, very windy on Saturday, and he just hung in there and hung in there, and yesterday he just got through the field, and luckily enough just clinched it. But you know, he has the ear of Tiger Woods. He plays a lot of golf with him, so you know, there's a big advantage there, as I said before, with the caddy, his father with him all the time as his golf coach. And he just seems to be a kid that's in a great, really great place, and he just seems to held his nerve very well, and luckily enough for him, he pulled through for a second major championship.
His consistency is incredible, Remy. I mean, he hasn't missed a cut in 12 months since last year's PGA Championship. 24 tournaments, 11 top 10 finishes in his last 17 tournaments. That's incredible. That's almost Tiger Woods-esque consistency.
Yes, he does. For a guy who has a massive amount of speed, there's a phenomenal photograph this morning on one of the Twitter handles of 2 feet almost off the ground through impact. And for somebody who has that type of speed, and then somebody who has the wedge game that he has, he's clinical with his wedges. He's probably the best wedge player in the world. You know, he from 80 yards, 110 yards, even back through to an 8-iron, his distance control, his wind shots, he definitely has so many more golf shots than the top, in my opinion, in the top 10 players in the world by a long, long way. And we know he struggles a little bit with a putter. We all struggle holding putts, seeing lines. Even last night, he didn't see the line on 18. He missed another putt around 12 that he misread as well. But he had a putter change this week, and that putter change certainly was a formula for him to pick this championship. But let's face it, he stole it from, you know, he certainly stole it from everybody's eyes last night. It was phenomenal television. It was great to watch because it was getting a little bit boring. The PGA, if I don't mind, you know, during the day, and then all of a sudden the sparks start to fly over the back nine. So it was a phenomenal achievement, and like it is seriously becoming very much Tiger-esque. And he maybe just lives beside him. He's very lucky that he's his sort of commander-in-chief if we get on the golf course, and he plays a lot of golf at Medalist in Florida, so he's obviously listening to the great man himself.
For the Irish, Remy, it was consistent from Shane Lowry all the way, 70, 72, 71, 69, whatever, catching fire. Seamus Power would be over the moon to have tied ninth in his second ever major. But what will Rory McIlroy's emotions be?
Well, Rory was 7-8 holes ahead of the leader, maybe 6 holes ahead. He got the 4 under. He made a bogey, I think, around 7. And, you know, he had birdie putts in 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I mean, Rory was probably chasing 8 under. You know, if he had it, when he got the 4, if he had to realise maybe 5 under was a number, but he was obviously leaderboard watching or whatever he was doing. But he's just very erratic at the moment. And his game, I mean, he's probably we all know he has the greatest talent on in golf, probably in the world. He is the showtime that everybody wants to watch and see. Phenomenal 65, 71, 74 on Saturday. It was a tough day. It was a very, very windy day. A lot of players played themselves out of the field. But it was a phenomenal achievement. I think Rory second in the Masters, 8th year, but he'll be disappointed. Hasn't won a major for quite a long, long time. And I do think that, you know, time is going against him in regards to trying to get maybe to double figures or whatever. But look, I'm a big fan. Everyone's a big fan. We just hope that he gets it together maybe at the US Open in Brookline or certainly St. Andrews and tries to pick up that sort of the missing link. You know, he seems to putt reasonably well in patches and then at times he doesn't. So it's a very difficult situation for his team, and he just has to try and get into that groove that Thomas is in or Scheffler's in or some of these other players, because he has a lot of manpower behind him that are coming around and around him. And it's probably frustrating, but you know, we all know how good he is, and he can wipe his feet at the door and go into the next week, and that's all he can do. But I personally, in my own opinion, and I really do think that he has to improve his approach play with shorter irons. He has to control his distance a little bit better, give himself a little bit easier putts from maybe 10 or 15 feet, maybe a little bit less spin on the golf ball. But look, he has a great team around him, and hopefully he'll be able to achieve that.
Okay, Remy Burns, thank you very much for that insightful review on the US PGA Championship last weekend. We will be turning our attention back to soccer and the League of Ireland specifically in a few moments' time.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game On as we turn our attention to the League of Ireland. And there's a full billing in the League of Ireland this evening. Sligo host Derry City. Drogheda United welcome Shamrock Rovers. St. Pat's face Bowes in one of two Dublin derbies. Shell's UCD is the other one. And Finn Harps Dundalk is the final fixture of this evening, kicking off at 8 p.m. Alan Colley is still live in studio, keeping myself, Shane Dawson and Ruby Walsh company. But Tony O'Donoghue is live in Inchicore to set the scene ahead of St. Patrick's Athletic versus Bohemian Football Club.
Yeah, it's fourth against fifth here tonight at Inchicore. I was here on Friday as well. Pat's welcoming Bowes tonight, another Dublin derby. But this has hardly been a fortress for them recently, you'd have to say. On Friday, they lost against Shelburne 2-1, and that followed a heavy home defeat, their last previous game at home to Derry. They lost that one 4-0. In the meantime, and in between those results, they did manage a three-match unbeaten run. So they're home again this evening. Tim Clancy hoping for a much better performance from his young side. I've just been looking at the ages here. Like, Sam Curtis is 16 years of age. He played well the other night, but to ask somebody of that age to turn around after a tough game on Friday night to play another Dublin derby. Ben McCormick is 19, Dara Burns is 19, Joe Redmond 21, Adam O'Reilly 21. So it is a tall order, I have to say. But James Abankwa, who's also only 19, he'll be on his way to Udinese shortly. This could be his last appearance this evening for St. Pat's. I think he's recovered from a knock. And they'll also be hoping, of course, that Chris Forrester can recover. He didn't finish the game on Friday, but hopefully he'll be able to start for them tonight. As for Bohemians, well, they had a good 2-0 win over Sligo. That probably hastened the departure of Liam Buckley from the Sligo hot seat. They're 3 points behind St. Pat's. They have a game in hand, and they're hoping to see the return of Liam Burt tonight. He's been recovering from a groin injury. So yet another Dublin derby. It should be tight. It should be tense. A lot at stake in this one.
Absolutely. Alan Colley, Tony mentioned there the departure of Liam Buckley from Sligo Rovers. Unfortunate how it ended for Liam at Sligo.
It did, but it wasn't surprising all the same, Shane. Like, you go back through the last 11 games, I think they'd only won 2 out of that 11, and one of those was against Drogheda United, who were down to 10 men, and it was a last minute winner. And you look at the most recent form in the last 5 games, the 3 defeats and 2 draws. So the form has been very indifferent. And especially after them getting off to a good start, they were unbeaten after 6 games. So you'd wonder why the form has dipped so bad, but it was pretty bad. And you go back to the latter end of last season as well. So I think all that has compounded the reasons as to why the board maybe looked to make a change, and the fans as well. And I was in Daly on Friday night, Shane, and I watched them last week against St. Pat's as well at home. And I have to say, particularly the one in Daly on Friday night, because Bows haven't exactly been pulling up any trees this year either. And they were so dominant, Bohemians. They were very, very poor Sligo over. So I can see why the decision has been made. Overall, Liam has done a good job getting to Europe over the last couple of seasons as well. And again, something like what I mentioned with Sean Dyche earlier, he's always carried himself very classily and with lots of dignity, Liam. So it's sad the way it ended, but that's football, Shane, but I'm not surprised by it, I have to say.
So John Russell takes charge this evening. Tony, have you heard any whispers of who might be getting the Sligo job in the short or indeed long term?
No, and I've noticed today that they have kind of, you know, put out the feelers further afield. So I mean, the mid-season break is coming up, so we have a bit of time on this one. And I imagine, you know, it's an attractive opportunity. I imagine there'll be plenty of interest from all around the world, all around the football world in this one.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. I think Sligo are appealing for applicants to drop in the CV on Twitter. Alan Colley, would you be interested?
Who knows, Shane? Who knows? Will I just add to the rumour mill? No, it is. Tony's right. It's an absolutely huge opportunity. There's lots of plans for the club down there, obviously, in the coming seasons as well, in terms of upgrading the ground. The ground is in good nick as it is. And you think back at the success that Paul Cook had in Barraclough there, there's huge potential with Sligo Rovers, and hopefully they can get a manager in soon. I think Tony's right as well about the break coming up. They don't have to rush into anything. They can take their time. John Russell will obviously take charge tonight, but they can take their time on this one and make sure they get the right appointment.
Might be no rush in Sligo, but there's a rush on us because the news is coming up at 7 o'clock. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Alan. Shane, I'll see you again tomorrow night. Tara Kumar's up next.